Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is the 3rd of February 2017 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. We are very pleased to welcome along today a special guest who we haven't seen for a while alongside myself and Dennis Wise. We also have Messerschmitt here with us today. So how are you doing today, Messerschmitt?
I'm doing quite well, thanks.
I was wondering if you were on the mute again then for a minute.
No, I was muted, but that's just I was confused because usually I talk to Dennis first. So
you're our guest of honour today. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Oh, I have all kinds of problems going on here, gremlins and everything.
Yeah, we're just pleased you're here, Dennis. We are just pleased you're here. We've had a few technical problems, but we're actually here, and we've also managed to publish Schmidt's new Axis War Heroes video today as well, which we're going to talk about first. Well done, Schmidt. I mean, it's fantastic. It's a really good video. I've watched it twice now. I think Dennis has managed to watch some of it just before we started a few minutes ago, really. But I suppose what we should really start with is if you give the listeners an idea of what's in this video, and then maybe you could tell us a little bit about where you got some of the video from. I mean, I'm really impressed with it, especially the musical parts and the tanks that you've got in there, and it all fits in really, really well with the narration. Just really impressive video. So let the listeners know all about it and all about the work that you've been putting into it, Schmidt.
Very well. It has been another learning experience for me, just like the Degrel video, which was my first video of the type. And it again starts off rather slow, just like the Degrel video. I guess there isn't usually that much footage around for the younger years of these war heroes. And so that kind of follows naturally. And again, I start off with some black and white footage of him, of Jochen Peiper, and talk about his early years, how he joined the Waffen-SS, and how Heinrich Himmler actually became aware of him and made him his lieutenant. And I did find some quite good footage of the early stages of the war with France, and I was able to use that to explain that it was actually France that declared war on Germany, not the other way around. And, as to where I get the footage from a variety of sources. Some are from Allied newsreels, some are from the Wochenschau German newsreel of the time, and there are some color footage documentaries that have been made in the last few years, or even decades now. I use some of them if possible. And I'm actually quite proud of the fact that I was able to eliminate all the watermarks this time. I did use footage with watermarks, but I eliminated those, so there's not a single watermark in the movie, as far as I know.
I didn't notice any. I certainly didn't notice any. I was going to say, just when you were talking about the French bit there, that newsreel that was showing you that the French riding back from Germany on stolen bicycles after attacking them. I mean, where did you find that?
That was in an English or American documentary about World War II. It's a whole series and called World War II in Color. And I think that's from the maybe third part or so.
Yeah, it really illustrated it well. And just talking about finding footage from the war, I've just remembered the Eichmann diaries, the real ones, that the unedited ones, they've just been put up on Simon Shepherd's revisionist.net site. Some of them, one side of it is written in German and the other side of it is written in English. Just to let listeners know that this is the only copy that there is available. It hasn't been put out in book form. It's been put up online, and it's an honest translation, the best translation that they could get of the Eichmann war diaries, basically. So listeners should get over there and have a read of that, because everything else that you read, all these other war diaries, they've all been edited by the publishers, and this has been signed by his wife as being the original copies. So people that are looking for this to find out genuine stuff about the war, that's where you want to go, revisionist.net.
Yeah, I'm also glad you made me aware of that earlier this week. I hadn't actually known that the Eichmann diaries were now published, the original ones. And on a related issue, I think it was this week also that Goebbels' secretary died at the age of 106. And when asked about the time back then, she said that even though she worked for Goebbels as a secretary, she never heard anything or saw any document or data that would relate to what is nowadays called the Holocaust. So I found that also interesting.
Well, that's just it. There is no evidence for that. I mean, it was just all made up, and then the Germans were beaten over the head with it. I think there may have been a few bits in some of these diaries where they say they were so shocked to discover that they were a part of this killing machine or whatever, but they actually weren't, and they knew nothing about it. And they only heard about it through this Allied propaganda. That's all it was. There's no forensic evidence for it. Nothing at all. But to get back to your video production, another part of it that I thought was very good, and we included this in the audio version of it, was the Jewish torturer that carried out the torture. And when the people were listening to that, when we were doing our Truth Without Radio, they couldn't actually see what was happening. And you've managed to include that so we can actually get a good look at the guy. And it's just very well done. I mean, you can imagine what it was like there in the courthouse. And I think he was very, very lucky that they did actually turn his sentence back from being the death sentence to life imprisonment, because all the other ones were tortured, and yet they weren't able to get away from the hangman's noose. And yet Joachim Peiper was. I think he was very lucky there, although it's very sad at the end and to hear that, you know, that there's been no charges pressed against these communists that went after him. You know, that is sad. But again, it's a very good letter that you managed to find that he reads out about how the Waffen-SS were the first real Europeans, because they saw themselves... Well, they saw themselves like we do now, as all part of the white race. We know the problems that the white race are facing, so we're not small-minded nationalists that are just out for our own countries, but we're out for every country that is a white country. And the Waffen-SS were out for every country in Europe, all the white countries. And they saw themselves as Europeans fighting to save Europe, rather than just fighting to save Germany. And he really makes it clear in that letter that he wrote. It's quite moving. But yeah, it's I mean, the last video was very good, and I feel this one's even better. It, you know, you've done so well, I think, to fit the music in and the tank battle, and it all really fits in well with the narration. I know listeners are really going to enjoy it when they go to YouTube and check it out. Dennis, did you manage to get a look at some of it? Did you manage to fit some of that in before you came on air?
I did, yeah, but I'm having problems over here at the moment. But go on quickly, because I'll kind of fix things while you're talking about the movie.
Oh, he's still having some audio problems. Yeah. We were having audio problems there right at the beginning. I could hear Dennis, but he couldn't hear me, and then he's had to reboot the computer and
just
everything else.
Now.
Yeah. you need to plug the headphones in or turn the volume up, Dennis. Look up the call settings and
turn the volume
up. Well,
there's no volume switch on these. That's the problem.
Ah, right. Okay. Right. Well, we'll keep talking to Schmidt. I'm sure it keeps the listeners entertained anyway. Schmidt, have you got any plans for a new one? Or you were talking about doing another presentation? I know you were talking to me about doing something on cannibals that you've been looking into, which I thought sounded really promising. You had any thoughts about what you're going to do next?
Well, I was reading about this African explorer called Paul Duchaillou. He's of French origin, but he was an American citizen at the time in the 1860s. And yeah, it's not particularly about cannibalism, but cannibalism comes up because he was the first white man to visit these some of these tribes and peoples, and he did come across cannibalism quite a lot. And one of the things that made me want to do a presentation on him is that I was looking up one of the tribes he discovered, so to say. And in the Wikipedia article on that tribe, it says that, well, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but it says more or less that even though there had been some rumors that they might have been cannibals, modern research shows this is not so. This was just mistaken. And this is so clearly untrue that I think it's worth telling people that that these stories about cannibalism were not invented by racist white people, but there's so much overwhelming evidence, and all the early African explorers agree on that. They all came in contact with these cannibalistic tribes.
Yeah, they're actual eyewitnesses of it. They're not talking about something that they heard from somebody else. I mean, they saw the equivalent of the butcher's shop that we have that sells all the meat in the window. They would have the equivalent of that, but with arms and legs and Negro heads. You know, these charnel houses that they had. I can remember reading about it in Negroes in Negro Land, and the author that you're speaking of, there were some sections that he had written, but there were all sections by all these different African explorers, and they all had the same thing to say. You know, wherever they went in Africa, this was the staple diet of the Negro. It was eating one another, which is why these missionaries wanted to go over there and convert them and turn them to Christianity and turn them away from this sort of behavior. And there are a couple of quotes from these missionaries when they get to the end of their lives, and they realize that when they go that these Negroes are just going to revert straight back to the savagery once they've gone. You know, the Negroes, they said that they can be, you know, really nice and they're like pleasant-natured children. And then on the other side of it, they can be complete savages and chop one another into little pieces over just the slightest disagreement. And they want to please the white man, so they would imitate the white man, but they had no real idea of what they were actually learning. And I don't think there's been any change from then until today. If you look at Haiti, which is under black rule, and you look at what they do there, it's a voodoo version. It doesn't bear any resemblance to the Christianity that we have in the white countries. And then if you look at Liberia again, which is under the control of the Negroes, that was set up with an American constitution. They'd all had the benefit of an American education. They'd been sent back there from America with all these ideas of democracy and government. And Liberia, again, has cannibals in it now. You have these cannibal warlords boasting of eating human hearts. And this political correctness, you know, it's totally distorting history. To try and claim that this didn't happen or it doesn't happen now is just a blatant lie, and it's all there because they want to integrate these people, or be charitable and call them people, these people into our societies when they're man-eaters. And that's the way that they've always been. You can read reports of them being man-eaters way back in Egyptian, Greek times, the classical times, the classical historians. They will all say the same. They really haven't changed. But I'd be very interested to hear your presentation on it, especially if it's just on this one explorer. I mean, how long did he actually spend over there, and what were what are the main things that he's actually known for then?
Well, he explored mainly equatorial Africa, but I'm not done yet with his memoirs, so I can't even say how far that he did get. But from an article I read on him, he's certainly famous for having procured the first specimens of gorillas for Western science and museums. And the gorillas had been sort of a legendary creature. It had been known in different texts of antiquity, but modern science had no confirmation of their existence until Paul Dushayuk came along. And he also discovered the Pygmies, the very small people of Africa. But I haven't gotten to that part yet, so I don't know how he discovered them exactly. I guess it was kind of the same story. There were stories about these small people amongst the natives, and he just followed the trail of their stories and then found them.
I don't think there's very many of them left, the Pygmies. He was lucky to find them. I know that that the other Congo tribes would eat them. They would hunt these little Pygmies down and eat them and practically wipe them out. I know they have wiped out races of Negroes over there by eating them into extinction. And there's very rare that you see Pygmies now. I can remember when I was a child, and you would see them on the television a lot. You would see these Pygmies. You know, when you're a child, you think, oh, isn't that sweet? You know, it's the same height as me. This, you know, but it's a fully grown man adult thing. What is it? You know, you think they're like little gnomes or something when you're a child. But I can remember seeing a lot of them on the television and reading about them, and you just really don't hear about them anymore. And I suppose that could be a lot to do with political correctness, because how could they say that all men are created equal when you've got a race of men that are about 2 feet high? You know, I mean, the running around naked in the middle of Africa. And that really doesn't, you can obviously see that there's a physical difference between the two, far more than just looking at the difference between whites and blacks when you've got such a massive size difference. And it obviously wasn't from inbreeding or anything like that. I mean, that's the type that they are. That's the kind that they are, is these little pygmy types. And the Bushmen as well. I mean, you've got all these different races in Africa, and they're always fighting amongst one another. And we're importing that into our countries. I wonder what he would have to say today if he knew that... we had these tribes that he found, that we had them living in our countries, and we made one of them into the president of the United States of America, and we gave them all these privileges over and above our own people, and made it illegal for anyone to criticize them or to not want to employ them. I bet he'd be spinning in his grave if he could see what was going on now. So you haven't thought about doing any others from the War Heroes series yet, then, Schmidt?
I haven't given it a specific thought, but I have some that I could fall back on. Like I have a book about several pilots that I could use, and there's also more from the U-boat or submarine department. So, as I just said last week to someone again, I'm not going to run out of these war heroes anytime soon.
I tell you what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the one that you did for the guy from Finland. If I remember rightly, he was a sharp shooter, and he was hitting his targets with only one eye. I seem to remember that he had quite an amazing kill count, as it were, and the story of him was very interesting. Have you thought about doing that one? Would that be a good one to pick, or might that be a bit awkward to find the footage of him for?
Well, that's exactly the problem that came to mind when I thought about it. But I can probably go around that by using more modern movie type footage as opposed to historical newsreel footage. Because I know there are at least three movies that have been made about the Winter War and the follow-up war against Russia. So I might be using that sort of footage more.
Yeah, you should be able to get some from any of the modern films on the Winter War. TJ is saying in the chat room, it's Simo Haya, The White Death. That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, definitely.
And the footage, I could probably also ask some of our Finnish members of the chat room if they have, if they can point me to any. Because, you know, it might be that on YouTube there's this great footage, but it's titled in Finnish and the description is in Finnish. So chances are I might never find it without any help. So, I could probably use some help there.
Well, this is a good thing about you being multilingual, isn't it? Being able to speak German and Swiss, so you can check out these reports as well and translate them into English for us. And I would have thought that a hero like that, a Finnish war hero, because he was kept as a hero after the war as well, I think, if I remember rightly. He's a national hero, so you would have thought they probably would have more footage of him. Am I right in thinking that he wasn't taken? He wasn't tried or anything like that, or taken to the Nuremberg? Is that right?
Yes, I have never heard of any persecution of him because of the war, what he did during the war. He's always a folk hero in Finland, from what I can tell.
Yeah, that would be a really good one to do next, I think. That's my tuppenny worth. I know the Finns in the chat room would probably like that as well. Dennis, have you managed to get your audio equipment sorted out yet? No, we've lost Dennis. Oh, well. I think what he was going to talk about. Go on.
I could talk some more about the video.
Please do.
Some of the experiences.
Yeah, please do.
Well, as I said, I removed the watermarks, and that actually took me quite some time, but I used some of the hints Dennis gave me. I was able to zoom in or stretch the picture, or simply move the watermark off screen, but then I have to compensate by moving it or stretching it a bit more. And I also used more music, as Dennis suggested, but while I was happy with the music, I now found that the lack of sound effects for the battle scenes, which used that music, that was kind of bothering me. And so I searched for sound effects like an 88mm cannon fire and the sounds of other weapons, and then added them to the footage. And I found timing is very important there. If you insert the sound of the cannon a quarter of a second too soon or too late, it just shows and it doesn't feel right when you watch the footage.
Well, it certainly looked good to me.
I'm glad. And the Kharkov footage is authentic. It's from the German newsreel of the time, but it's very degraded footage. I don't know what happened to it. Maybe it was lying in water, or I don't know. But I couldn't find any better quality, so I had to use what I had. Maybe there's some good reel somewhere in an archive somewhere, which is not available to the public, but I'm not aware of it, so I had to use it, or not use any at all. And the same goes for the Bad Tölz footage. That's the Waffen-SS officer school. Very degraded footage, but I couldn't find any better. Right. And yeah, for the trial, I used the uncut footage of the trial, which is on the internet. But again, I had to remove watermarks there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it all looks good to me. I'm still trying to get Dennis back on here. Let's see whether he can. He says he's having to turn us up on full blast for some reason at his end. Dennis, are you back with us now?
Well, I'm back with you, but I can't say things 100%.
Well, you're sounding fine here.
Well, that's a plus.
Yeah, you're sounding fine. There's no problem at this end.
No, well, there's plenty at this end because I've just lost all my notes. But we'll crack on if we can.
Yeah. You were saying you managed to see a little bit of Schmidt's film. He was saying he managed to get rid of the watermarks. Was that using what Dennis suggested to get rid of the watermarks, Schmidt?
Yes, he suggested stretching images or footage. Sometimes that does work. It doesn't distort the footage too much. But sometimes I was able to simply move off the whole footage, partly off screen, so that the watermark, which was a let's say top left of screen, was moved out of the actual screen that you see later in the video. You have to compensate for that, because otherwise you have a black sort of beam at the bottom of the screen. But yeah, it worked out fine. But it was quite a lot of work sometimes. For example, that torturer, that Jew, I think his name is Pearl, William Pearl. I was able to remove the watermark, but then suddenly only half of his face was visible. So I had to use a different method of removing it. Yeah, and I also took care to only use, whenever possible, the footage that that had no watermarks from the beginning. That's always the easiest.
Yeah, it seems like quite a lot of work, but you succeeded in doing it, I think. It was it's come across very well. And Dennis, you've been working on something as well, haven't you, just recently?
Yeah. I won't tell you what happened to that, but... It started on the a documentary this week, and what I wanted to do was I wanted to debunk the myths of Adolf Hitler. As you know, I get these ideas, and then the other week, and then I changed my mind midway through, and I started off with this one where myth number one was Prescott Bush, and whether or not he funded Hitler and the National Socialists.
And, well, that seems like a pretty good one to do. I mean, we've talked about that a few times, haven't we? The way that people try and say that it was the enemy that was funding Hitler. But obviously, he was just trying to make an investment to make some money rather than controlling Hitler in any way, I would have thought.
Well, that's partly true, obviously, because he's a capitalist, and you've got to put yourself in that mindset that there was no talk. Well, the only talk of war was from the Jews. Hitler certainly wasn't talking of war at that point. And so, you know, the capitalists in America, with a country which was about to or in recession, they're going to try and get some money from abroad. And obviously Germany was the leading a powerhouse in Europe after a couple of years of getting rid of the bankers. Apparently, one of the research was there was two Holocaust survivors. Like I said, I haven't got my notes for me now because they vanished mid-restart. Two Holocaust survivors who took the Bushes to court to sue them for $40 billion. This is... can't tell the exact date, but it was in the early part of the 2000s. A mammoth amount, because they said that the Bushes made their fortune from the slave labour at Auschwitz. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. You're coming through
all right,
loud and clear.
I can't hear anything at all, so if you can just... every now and again cough or something.
Yeah, you're coming through loud and clear. There's a few clickings, but I'm just trying to work out where they are. I think they might be clicking from Schmidt's end. So what were they saying? Were they trying to get money out of them for suffering during the Holocaust and saying that Prescott Bush was responsible, so he should be paying the money for some reason? What was their logic as to why they were able to sue him?
They reckon that he got the fortune on the back of slaves at Auschwitz. So they were looking to earn a quick $40 billion. But I looked into it, obviously, and even I don't think it was the greatest story ever told. We have footage of Jews at Auschwitz talking how they got paid and how they could buy things at the canteen. They could also have money sent to them from Jewish communities. One particular Jew spoke about an Austrian Jewish community sent them money once a month, and they also got paid in the camp as well. So they have, well, when money finally ran out, they have these tokens which they can go and get cigarettes. And so it wasn't slave labour, although we're always led to believe this.
Go on.
That kind of cleared that one up, because you've actually got the Jew talking. I used one of the Jews who was at Auschwitz talking. So what really happened was that when he married a lady called Dorothy Walker, she was the daughter of one of the powerful Wall Street bankers, and he gave Bush some directorships. And she's really, there's not that much information on her, but you can bet your bottom dollar that she was with a few million herself at some stage. But there's absolutely nothing, only all I could find was her name, and that she was married, and she had obviously who we call Bush Senior, and obviously the grandson was George Junior, but that's all I could find on her. So that was strange. But like I said, it was given some directorships, and one was the Union Bank Corporation. Now, I'm getting this information from a documentary, but apparently it turns out that wasn't a bank at all. It was a clearinghouse for Franz Fritz Thyssen, the steel magnate from Germany, who was obviously, with the threat of communism, had funded the Nazi party and even bought Hitler headquarters. But that's not unusual, because at that time, a lot of top businessmen, I mean, Ford himself, Henry Ford was one, hated communism. And especially if you've got a mill or a factory in Germany, and the threat of communism coming in, you're going to lose your livelihood. So they looked at the National Socialists as the only party who would fight the communists, because, as you know, Sven, they've been fighting communists since the end of World War One. And I even put up a piece out of the book that you narrated, Communism in Germany, showing just exactly how many lives were lost in that battle to get to power, and the many injuries that National Socialists received in the fighting, because many a time they were outnumbered, and yet they still stuck to the guns and eventually got to power. So these people were well rehearsed in fighting communism, should I say. And obviously, you know, it appealed to people like this Fritz Thyssen and other businessmen.
Well, yeah, of course it would appeal to them. There's still picking up a bit of rustling, but we can hear you fine now. I don't know if that may be someone moving around there trying to help you sort out the computer or something. But one thing that made me think of is if these people were trying to sue Prescott Bush for money, saying that there was slave labor in Auschwitz and they actually lost. Well, that means that it's been proved in a court of law that the people at Auschwitz weren't slaves, that they were actually being paid for that, which shows you that it wasn't a death camp. It was a work camp, and they were actually receiving wages for that. Is that what happened in court? Is that why these two that were trying to take him to court lost? And if that is so, then, you know, surely that's gold dust, really. I mean, that proves everything that we say, doesn't it? And it's, you know, that's been said in a court of law. Surely the transcripts to that could be very helpful. Do you know more about that?
Well, I do know that they didn't win the case. The government ruled for the Bushes, which is not surprising one way, but, you know, the fact is that it didn't in any way really fund him. I mean, I go on to explain a little bit later the reality of why he didn't or why he wouldn't. But up to this point, the documentary, what I was taking the information from, which was suggesting that Prescott Bush funded him, was saying that obviously with this money, Hitler could now start to build for war. Well, you know, and I know, and a lot of the world out there know, that he wasn't building for war at all, because after the Versailles Treaty, with only 100,000 of an army, no navy or air force, and surrounded by the threat of communism, as communism had once taken over Germany for a couple of days, the threat from the East and Stalin, obviously rumours coming back from the Ukraine. So to actually defend a country with 100,000 armies, just kind of, well, ludicrous. In fact, no leader worth the salt would have actually stood for it. But at the end of the day, you know, he built his army up as best he could to defend himself. Also, this Tyson fellow, this Fritz Tyson fellow, who had been a funder of the National Socialists, later was run out of Germany. He escaped out of Germany and went to Switzerland. I mean, he was eventually caught and put in prison or a concentration camp, but didn't really unduly suffer. So there must have been going on something between him and obviously the National Socialists. Possibly a fraud. You know, he was probably up to no good. If he's a mate of a Bush, you can say that that's a safe bet. Like I say, you know, Prescott Bush was only a director anyway, and he's I mean, it's a little bit like me going to the local bank and drawing out some savings and then finding out later in the day that that bank had actually dealt with, say, Iran. Am I to blame? No. You know what I'm saying? It's things go above things. And like I said, the capitalists anyway, and they're out to make the money. But then the reality check of it all is why he wouldn't have actually funded him, even if he'd... Well, I don't think he would have ever wanted to, because obviously the Bush family, it runs in the family, they're bonesmen, they're skull and bones. So that's one thing which Hitler and Prescott Bush would have known about as well, that Hitler was destroying Freemasonry, as was Mussolini and Franco, in Europe. And so being a member of Skull and Bones, he would have more likely hated Hitler rather than funded him. Obviously, with George Bush as well, a little bit later on, we find out that he's a neocon. And then, obviously, we hear the New World Order speech from Bush Sr. after he took the presidency and they invaded Iraq. So we can safely say that these were neocons who are Trotskyites, who were formed in 1920 by Irving Kristol in New York, one of the universities in New York. You're either a Stalinist or you're a Trotskyite. The neocons were Trotskyites and Jewish originally, and helped Prescott Bush's son, Bush Sr., into power. And ever since then, like I say, these neocons have been in the Republican Party. Some have been in the Democratic as well. I believe Clinton was one. And they're obviously... the kind of people that Hitler would have had shot or put in prison.
Yeah, he was obviously completely against Freemasonry or anything to do with that. So Prescott Bush was just the director of the bank, really. I mean, he may not even have known what investments were being made. I do like the idea. Well, I say I do like the idea of... the Jews suing the Bushes and seeing which one's going to win. If the Jews had won, then I guess it would have shown that Prescott Bush had was obviously trying to make money out of the Germans, so the Germans couldn't have been that bad after all. And if Prescott Bush wins, then it shows you that the Jews were obviously lying. I think it was probably the better outcome, since Prescott Bush won, and it showed that these Jews were being paid. And so the transcripts of that, you know, that could be really useful, because it shows without a shadow of a doubt that the people in Auschwitz were paid for the work that they were doing.
That's right.
And I don't know whether Hitler would have... Well, he obviously couldn't have done anything about it if knowing about the Bushes being involved in Skull and Bones. But he obviously got rid of all the Freemasonry in Germany. I noticed on your channel you've also got a video showing someone showing a Freemason's Bible. I think he's the guy who's showing that. I think he's exaggerating it a bit to try and make it seem more sinister than it actually is. But it is interesting that they've got... their own Bibles, and they put all this stuff about Freemasonry at the front of it, and all this stuff about Solomon's Temple, as if that's, you know, that's the central part of the Bible is Solomon's Temple. It's not, and Solomon's Temple was built for God. It wasn't built for built for Solomon. And they make this big thing about that at the beginning, and then sort of highlighting these Egyptian gods. Now, I know in the back of all Bibles, they show you bits and pieces that go on around the area, like this is what went on in Babylon, this is what went on in Egypt. So, you know, maybe you could say that that's all it was doing there, is just trying to give some background information. But it's not that good to have all the names of these Egyptian gods there in the back of the Bible, and all this stuff about Solomon's temple. They do their swearing on the Bible as well. I think the guy who was showing it, I think he was trying to exaggerate things a bit, because he points out something that he calls an obelisk, and it's not really an obelisk. That's I think it's called Shalmaneser's stone. It's a stone of a king that records the battles that went on, and one of them included a battle with Israel. So I think he was trying to exaggerate a bit, but it's still, you know, it's still interesting that they produce their own Bibles and they put their Freemasonic stuff at the beginning, as if to say that this is the most important bit, you know.
Well, with 33 pages till the Bible started. I'm not a fan of Freemasonry at all. I mean, I do disagree with you there about the Solomon thing, because in Egypt, in Israel today, where they're hoping to one day build that temple outside that courthouse, what should be known as the World Courthouse once the New World Order takes over, the one with the pyramid on top, are covered in communism by the back door. And outside they have this stone with the two pillars, which represent, as far as I'm aware, two demons who supposedly helped to build the temple. But the pillars are often seen in Freemasonry as a Masonic sign. You'll see this in books and things. And to be honest, whether or not the books got things, whether exaggerated or not, I mean, it is a Bible which should have been handed in on the person's death, because Freemasons are obviously a secret society. They don't want the Bibles or any information getting out. This one must have sneaked through the net and maybe died, and maybe it got put in with a lot of books when maybe somebody sold all his belongings. But the fact is, when I did the research on Freemasonry, the sole goal of Freemasonry, the fifth column for the Jews in all the Western world countries, and the sole aim is to see a one world communist government.
A Luciferian one world government. It highlights that point there as well, doesn't it? That the
Christianity.
Well, you know, in that that Freemasonic Bible, isn't it? It says that that they ask a question, "What do you want? Light?" And then they ask again, "What do you want? More light?" And more light again. And a big secret at the end of it is that the light bringer is Lucifer, the Luciferian.
Yeah, Robert Pike opened up about this in Morals and Dogma. But like he said, although it didn't show a page from that book, it was a kind of a side shot to the actual screen as they were talking. He was saying that it did mention that Freemasons want to kill all Christianity. And when you think they are Luciferian, and I can remember what a guy, I can't remember his name now, but he was high up in the United Nations, and he said something on the lines of the New World Order will be Luciferian, and if you don't change to be a follower of Lucifer, then there'll be no room in the New World Order for you. And he was talking, obviously, about Christians. So I do think that the white culture of Europe and Christianity is the top of the agenda for the Freemasons and the Jews to wipe out, as we're seeing.
Well, I think the Luciferian agenda is a materialist humanist one, isn't it? It's the one that says that everything is material. Whatever is best for the individual is what's best, and so long as you're not harming anyone else, the individual can do whatever he likes, and you don't need a god, and you don't need laws to have come from God. Man can make his own laws, and man is at the top of the pyramid. It's like deifying the human being. deifying the creation rather than the creator. So of course it's tempting because it's saying that it's going to make you into a god. And of course that's exactly the same thing that the serpent said to Eve in the garden way back Correct. There at the beginning of the Bible, and it's still the same thing today. It you know, with these Freemasons, it's all studying knowledge, trying to learn things and all this trying to advance and none of it is learning what comes from God.
Yeah, but they're trying to be deceitful as well by eliminating God. I mean, the EU doesn't have God in the constitution because it's a communist agenda, and so same with the United Nations. But what they preach, I mean, they sometimes throw this at Hitler as well, but it all stems from Darwinism, which was obviously born out of London, and they're claiming that you know, that there's no God, you know, the world happened millions and millions of years ago when this huge explosion went off, and in this one huge explosion, suddenly all the correct DNA from left and right and up and down all joined together to form life. And from that, we then developed from a fish into a monkey. And I'm now being told that my great, great descendants or ancestors are monkeys. When in reality, if you take a step back, and if they're saying that this huge explosion created life, it's the only explosion in history that's ever created life, because every other explosion destroyed things. And it's, you know, they have the certain agendas. NASA, again, is a Masonic organization, and I got great doubts about them actually going to the moon, because all that, if once you put a man on the moon, and you're talking about putting a man on Mars, the less God is an influence. So, for instance, if you took a survey in Europe, say in 1930, 1920, you know, God would be more prominent. Once you've said that you've landed, you know, on the moon, and you've got plans to go to these other planets, etc., you know, suddenly people will believe in aliens more than the willing God. And I do believe that is their agenda. And with the scientist called Van Allen, who discovered the Van Allen radiation belt around the Earth, it's highly unlikely that we've got anything what can go through that patch, never mind back in 1969. That's just my own personal feelings. But again, you know, I look at the Freemasons at NASA, and they've already, you know, pulled one big hoax over the world. Doesn't surprise me if they pull another one.
Well, they're always finding that the things that NASA predict that don't actually turn out that way. I mean, when they sent that probe to land on a comet, it was supposed to be a dirty snowball, and it wasn't. It was a rock, and it bounced on it. And the CERN accelerator, that was supposed to discover the God particle, and it didn't discover anything of the kind. It didn't discover what they were looking for. So when they found something else, they then said, oh, this must be the God particle. Never mind that it didn't actually fit the parameters of what they were looking for. They just changed. When they get these results that say that your theory is wrong, instead of changing the theory, they just invent stuff. 99% of the universe isn't actually here. It's all dark matter and dark energy, because these scientists had to invent it to compensate for all the other theories which don't actually work out. And you can trace it all back to Einstein, the Jew Einstein, who the Jews like to promote and say he was so intelligent and wonderful, and yet everything that's been based on his theories doesn't stack up. You know, it doesn't Yep. actually turn out to be right. I'm sure listeners have probably heard of the electric universe theory. I talk about it quite a lot, but the Thunderbolts project is where to go. And they'll explain everything in the universe to do with electricity and magnetism. And, you know, you can actually see the results of their experiments, because you can scale it all down. Whatever you see happening in the universe, you can scale it down and test it here on Earth. And their experiments come out as predicted, how they predict that they're going to come out, unlike NASA, who are always being surprised by their experiments. And these electric universe guys, they predict what's going to happen. Like they predicted it when that probe was it? They predicted that it wasn't going to be like a snowball. It was going to bounce. It would be a rock. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. People just wouldn't believe it. The height of the hoaxing that goes on. You know, it's bad enough with the Holo hoax and the fact that 6 million Jews didn't die and there were no gassings. But it's even more than that. You know, with this whole scientific theory thing. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility for the moon landing to be a hoax at all, Dennis. You know, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility.
I don't know if anybody out there has seen the actual interview of the three astronauts who were supposed to go to the moon when they come back and the other a press conference. It just wasn't, it was a wake. I mean, for something like landing on the moon or walking on the moon, one of the, if it actually happened, was one of the greatest feats, if not the greatest feat of mankind. And if you watch that press conference, which is up on YouTube, there was just no enthusiasm. They were obviously told to lie, and some people can't lie. They feel uncomfortable. Some can, but, you know, Neil Armstrong actually stopped giving interviews after a certain amount of time because he didn't want to talk about it anymore. And strange enough, when he died, he was buried at sea. Now, why do you think that's strange? Well, all national heroes in America are buried at Arlington. Why would they bury Neil Armstrong at sea? I don't know.
Why didn't they shoot him into space? Scatter his dust in the orbit. Another part of that video, I mean, it says that they believe that the end justifies the means. And this is exactly what communism thought. The end justifies the means. Yeah. You know, we can kill 60 million people because life's going to be better at the end of it. And that's the temptation. Well, once you start breaking the moral laws because you're trying to achieve an end which you perceive to be moral, once you started breaking a few, then you've got to keep going because otherwise, you know, it's been wasted. You know, you've done all those wrong things and you still haven't achieved the good thing at the end. So you've got to keep going. You've got to crack a few more heads. You've got to kill a few more people. Just a few more because it's only just around the corner, this wonderful utopia that we're getting to. This is the way the left thinks. Yeah. Now, this is why we're having all these riots because they think that the end justifies the means. It's fine for them to riot and kill a few people because at the end of it, we'll have a utopia. And of course, that's not how it works. That isn't how it works. The end needs to be the means as well. You know, you need to do the right thing and then the end will be the right thing. If you do the wrong thing, you'll never get to a right end. You'll just end up having to keep adding more lies and more deception onto it and more worse things until you get to the situation that we're in today. You know, the end really does not justify the means. That was a central plank of communism. And National Socialism said, well, no, that's not right. You know, the end and the means have to work together.
At the end of the day, though, I mean, if you've got a one-world government, which is what they're intending, and they then think they will then have peace and there'll be no more wars, I mean, that's just a world with no dissent. I mean, it's like free speech when people get upset about hearing somebody say something that they don't like. But that's what free speech is all about. It's no good going around just saying things that everybody wants to hear. That's defeats the object. So, you know, this one world government, I think, is it's a pipe dream anyway, because you'll always have resistance somewhere. Unless, of course, you chip everybody and dumb everybody down to a level where, you know, you can only think about getting up in the morning and going to work, which is probably what they got in mind.
Well, the only way to really get rid of war is to kill everyone, isn't it? You know, you get rid of everyone and then you won't have any more war. I mean, wasn't it Prince Charles who said, you know, he'd like to come back as a virus and kill all the human beings because if he could kill all the human beings, then there'd be no more war or pollution or any of the problems that the Earth has. You know, if you look at things that way, that's what you end up with.
Job.
When you take God out of it, when you take out of the fact that man is a unique being with a unique soul and spirit and right at the top, and absolutely unique, and the bringer of civilization and the imagination and creation and all these things that all comes from God. If you take that out of it and just look at man as a material being, then yeah. You just think, well, all he does is damage the earth. What's the good of man? You know, you can't divorce the matter from the spirit, because man doesn't have any worth then. It's the spirit that man has that gives him his worth. You know, when he lays down his life for his nation, you know, when he calls in a bombing raid on ISIS so that they can't get to him, you know, when he teaches his child the truth about race and brings his child up in the right way that a child should be brought up, all these things that you can't put a numerical value on, you can't put an economical value on it, but you know, virtue is priceless, and man is virtuous, and we do have a desire to be virtuous. It's just that everything gets twisted up by this wicked world that we live in.
Yeah, well, the kind of United Nations have another set of sub parts of that complex, which go into education, and then you know these are the people what teach the kids about. You can be a boy on Monday and Tuesday, and a girl on Wednesday and Thursday. There's no such thing as gender. This is all coming from the United Nations, and that's communism. Feminism is another one. You know, it's just all the things which are what God made a perfect world with a man and a woman to, you know, enjoy the fruits of life. And everything that the Masons and the Jews, etc., is all anti-God. You know, they want a world without God. And when, like I said in the documentary, if you have a world without God, as these other places have had in the past, Babylon, Mayans, civilization eventually collapses.
You end up in a world full of lies. That's why we've got to hold to the truth, and that's why we produce Truth Without Radio. Dennis, thank you very much for coming on. Mr. Schmidt, thank you very much for coming on.
Apologies, by the way, for the problems today.
Never mind. Thank you, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, at Radio Aryan. Have a great weekend.
Tuned in to Radio Aryan.